It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Well, this is a long and fascinating story, really. So Pastor Brunson, who'd been a longtime resident in Turkey, was arrested about 2 years ago, and he was accused of being in contact with what Turkey considers terrorists, Kurdish militant groups, and with people who Turkey believes were responsible for launching a failed coup against the President Erdogan. So he was charged with very serious crime, supporting terrorists and supporting coup plotters. He denied this. The U.S. State Department denied it. But he has been in jail and then later in house arrest for 2 years. And there have been efforts to release him. There have been efforts, a lot of pressure put on Turkey from the United States to secure his release. And there was an attempt a couple of months ago where the U.S. thought it was pretty close to a deal. And then we're told that the deal went south because, frankly, President Trump issued some tweets insulting Turkey. The president of Turkey, Erdogan, took that as a personal insult, and the positions became more retrenched, and the pastor remained in custody. Now, today, a judge just sentenced him, but sentenced him to time served and let him go. And he is in the process of getting out of this country. And I don't think the timing is a coincidence because of what has just happened, allegedly happened at the Saudi consulate over a week ago where I am right now. Turkey needs friends. Turkey needs the United States. Turkey needs to give the impression that it is building an international consensus against what it believes was a Saudi murder on Turkish soil and does not want to confront Saudi Arabia alone, wants to have powerful friends, wants to have the United States. And I think that's why it was very keen to put this old problem behind it.
All right, that was NBC News doing the report of Andrew Brunson, of course, with their own spin, not wanting to give President Trump credit for this. And certainly he deserves the credit for this because the Trump administration has been relentless punishing Turkey. And this is, you know, when you deal with Islamists, there's this pride bluster. They claim certain things. They want to be seen as the alpha dog. And so when you insult them, you would think that it would be scary. That's why a lot of American presidents and others have not crossed them, haven't drawn a line in the sand, because they're afraid, because they make a lot of boasts and they talk about what they're going to do. But really, in the final analysis, when you stand up to them, they do back down. And that's what happened in Turkey. Sanctions were brought to bear and the squeeze was put on to release Andrew Brunson, and he has been released. I want to there's just some wonderful things about this I want to take time to just talk about for a second. You know, Andrew Brunson, I have to say to you, I actually even want to apologize. I have not covered this story hardly at all. I just, because I've been covering political news and everything, my mind gets swallowed up. And I'm so thrilled about this. You know, I realize he's been in Izmir, Turkey for something like 24 years. I've been to Izmir. Gorgeous, beautiful town. I just can't even describe to you how beautiful Turkey was before Erdogan has taken it toward the Islamic direction. He is an Islamist. But Izmir has been a beautiful, beautiful place, and I've met Turkish people there who have been very influenced by Christian pastors who have gone over there to teach, to do seminaries. It's just been amazing. So I find myself wondering if Andrew Brunson isn't one of those persons that I'd heard about earlier, not recognized it. But he and his wife have been over there something like 23 years. He was released. The story is that they brought in these people to swear that he had been a part of this so-called coup. By the way, many of us don't believe it was a coup. We believe it was a setup to allow Erdogan to murder people that opposed him. But they're calling it a coup. They accused Andrew Brunson and, of course, thousands of others of being involved in this. But when they had the trial just a few days ago, they actually brought in the people that had pledged that he was cooperating with this coup, and they recanted their stories. They recanted their stories. The judge still charged him, said that he was guilty, but then they released him. So they saved face. You see how this goes. They said that he was guilty, but they were going to release him anyway because he'd been in held for 2 years. So they released him. And the president has thanked Turkey's President Recep Erdogan. And again, he's an Islamist. He dresses up well. He looks like a Westerner, but he is not. Maybe much like Bashar al-Assad. They wear Western suits, educated. Well, at least Bashar al-Assad was educated in the West. They present well, but they're not on our team, and they don't think like we do. Turkey has been going through some real hard times economically because of the sanctions, and Erdogan was really in a bind, and people were getting restless. And so they have released Andrew Brunson. You probably know that he was in the Oval Office. I want to tell you this one thing. You know, when he landed in Germany, the ambassador there is Richard Grenell. Just a sidebar, Richard Grenell is openly gay. He's been a real patriot. I'm just saying, this was controversial when he was first appointed way back when, I think under the Bush administration, but he is now the ambassador to Germany. And he tweeted this, and there's a picture. I welcomed Pastor Brunson and his wife to Germany on their refueling stop. He's almost home, thanks to Donald Trump. When I presented him with the U.S. flag, he immediately kissed it. And there's a picture of him doing that with his wife standing by his side smiling. It was four government witnesses who recanted their testimony. Oh, I guess he didn't, after all, cooperate with that so-called coup against Erdogan. So he came back, and within just a few hours, he was in the Oval Office. And this is probably what you heard over the weekend. But let's just stop for a second to hear a report about this. Let's listen.
Lord God, I ask that you pour out your Holy Spirit on President Trump, that you give him supernatural wisdom to accomplish all the plans you have for this country and for him. I ask that you give him wisdom in how to lead this country into righteousness. I ask that you give him perseverance and endurance and courage to stand for truth. I ask that you protect them from slander, from enemies, from those who would undermine. I ask that you make him a great blessing to this country. Fill him with your wisdom and strength and perseverance. And we bless him. May he be a great blessing to our country. In Jesus' name, we bless you. Amen.
I just want to pray that the Spirit of the Lord would rest on the President. The spirit of wisdom and understanding, the spirit of counsel and might, the spirit of knowledge and fear of the Lord. Amen.
That was his wife. Can you imagine, you know, the press corps is there, at least the photographers are there, and they're, you know, you see the gaggle of press reporters, you know what that looks like. So they're all hovering over Andrew Brunson sitting in that chair. You often see the president talking with someone with one chair, two chairs next to each other. And Andrew then looks to him and says, can I pray for you? The president replied, well, I need it probably more than anyone else in this room. So that would be very nice. Thank you. So then Brunson, I'm sure he surprised Trump. He gets out of the chair and he kneels, puts his hand on President Trump. And you heard what he said, but I'm going to read it again. He asked God to give him supernatural wisdom to accomplish all the plans you have for this country and for him. I ask that you give him wisdom in how to lead this country into righteousness. I ask that you give him perseverance and endurance and courage to stand for truth. I ask that you protect him from slander, from enemies, from those who would undermine. I ask that you make him a great blessing to this country. Fill him with your wisdom and strength and perseverance. And we bless him. May he be a great blessing to our country. In Jesus' name, we bless you. Amen. I just want to pause and just think about that moment. That's an amazing thing to take place in the White House. Almost as stunning as the story I recently told you about. I've told you more times than recently about being in Beijing after 9/11 and watching CNN night after night to just get any news from home and seeing a CNN anchor ask a pastor to pray on the set right there. This is just about as amazing. A pastor on his knees in the Oval Office in front of that press gaggle. I'm sure Pastor Brunson didn't care about that, wasn't concerned. And just the fact that God, you know, his presence is there in the Oval Office. and his spirit is making himself known. He did that in the recent confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. We've talked about that in a hearing room when Brett extended, exampled the power of the Holy Spirit in speaking the truth, but also his mercy toward his accusers. That's just an amazing thing. And we're watching some amazing times. I want to mark this moment, build an altar. God is at work. And that doesn't mean there's going to be a great outcome from our physical perspective. It doesn't mean we're going to win. Doesn't mean President Trump is going to do everything right, that we're going to be prosperous. Doesn't mean our children are safe. It doesn't. There's no guarantee. But God's will is being worked with the help of his people. I just think God is hearing us. He's hearing his people. And I think he is giving us a reprieve. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But these are incredible times to be alive. I was listening, by the way, we were just in Branson, Missouri last week at the AFA retreat. If you have not been at an AFA retreat, you need to mark it down and come and join us next year. It was just a wonderful time. We heard Ray Pritchard preached, Ed Vitagliano spoke so powerfully, so did Abraham Hamilton. It was a great time of prayer, of ministry. Tim Wildman did a great job talking about how God had been working in him personally. He had a terrible car accident this year and how God had just quickened his spirit as he told the story. We had a wonderful time. And the thing that struck me is, for those of you listening who listen to AFR Talk and listen to this show and were so gracious to me about the value that AFR Talk has to you, what I sense is that God is quickening his people. He is quickening. He's quickening the spirit in them. They're rising up. They are rising to the occasion and doing various things in various ways. I was listening to David Jeremiah preach yesterday on AFR Talk, which I love on Sunday mornings. If you haven't listened, you should tune in. David Jeremiah was preaching, and it's a recent sermon. Some of them are older, but this one was recorded after Billy Graham died. And I noticed the energy in David Jeremiah's voice, the urgency. I also noticed that his congregation was loud and responsive. I've never heard that congregation do that. Now, that could be a one-time thing, but that's my impression. I just think God is quickening the spirit of his people. So be encouraged. I have so much more to tell you. I think, I'm going to end this segment by just mentioning this. I'm going to get into this with Sebastian Gorka, who'll be my guest on Friday. But you know that the Saudi Arabian journalist, they call him a journalist. His name is Khashoggi. He did write occasionally for the Washington Post, and it's being positioned as though he was a journalist, when I don't think that's really true. I think he's written, but I don't think that's really what he did. But the story is that he went to the Turkish embassy, which ties into the Andrew Brunson story. He went to the Turkish Saudi embassy in Turkey and never came out. And the reports are that he was brutally murdered, but there's no sign of that. It's just talk. We don't know, but we know that he never got out. So you're hearing a lot about this, the president being put on the spot about what are you going to do if the Saudis did this to this Washington Post reporter. The other side of that is that it appears, look, no matter what, if he did get killed, this is not an excuse for that. It's just that my understanding now is that Khashoggi was a strong apologist for the Muslim Brotherhood, and that he had spoken about the Saudi prince leadership, because the Saudi prince, the one who's in charge now, is not, he's an Islamist. They're both brutal. I mean, but the degrees are different. The Saudis are not so much for the Muslim Brotherhood. And so they allegedly have killed him. That's at least the storyline. And that puts Erdogan in Turkey more at risk, because the Saudis and the Turks are kind of at loggerheads. Erdogan is a Muslim Brotherhood supporter. The Saudi prince is not, at least not to the degree that they are. It's all a matter of degrees. Many people feel that the reason that the Erdogan released Andrew Brunson was to curry favor with President Trump, to help him with the Saudis, because he may be a little bit frightened about that rivalry. It's all very interesting, and I will be talking to Sebastian Gorka about that more. You'll hear that conversation this coming Friday. So stay tuned. There's so much to tell you. Don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Len Ingram of Redeem Clean felt God call him to support the American Family Association.
I'm a laundry man. I'm the son of a laundry man, too. I love clean clothes. I love the business. I love everything about it. This project was built exclusively to support AFA and AFR. There's no strings attached. Another thing that I would like to see come out of this is that I would like to see other business people feel a calling to support ministries wherever and whatever they do to share the gospel of Jesus Christ.
In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and get Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hi, my name is Mark, and I'm from Dallas, Texas. I came to this country a long time ago, but I didn't become a citizen until 2 years ago. I was a resident alien. So I can vote now, and AFA has really helped me to be engaged with the culture and how to pray for the culture, how to pray for this country, and also how to vote for elected officials that are going to make an impact.
Hi, this is Chad from Iowa. I have become a fan of Focal Point and Brian Fisher, and as a result of Family Radio and Focal Point, I have become more active in calling congressmen, senators. Keep doing what you're doing, and God bless.
American Family Radio's mission is to inform, equip, and activate our listeners to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture. Plan to partner with us in this vital work during our three-day Share-a-thon, beginning tomorrow on American Family Radio.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Jim Brown is a football legend, a member of the College Football Hall of Fame and the NFL Hall of Fame. Sporting News says Brown is the greatest professional football player in the history of the game. He is American sports royalty. So when Jim Brown speaks, it's a pretty good idea to listen to what he says. The other day, he was asked about all those NFL players taking a knee during the national anthem.
I don't think that we should take knees in protest instead of standing up for our flag. I think we should work out our problems as a family. I am an American. That flag is my flag, and I want to represent it that way.
Now that is the voice of reason, a voice seasoned by patriotism and wisdom. And imagine how much better off our nation would be if more American kids would emulate people like Jim Brown instead of people like Colin Kaepernick. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Hello, I'm Dick Tapper in Washington, where the state of our union is in crisis. It's just over 3 weeks until the midterm elections, and President Trump is dealing with two major tests of his leadership. On the world stage, an unfolding diplomatic crisis over the disappearance of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who should be celebrating his 60th birthday this weekend. President Trump said Saturday he was planning to talk to the King of Saudi Arabia shortly, and in a new interview with 60 Minutes is vowing to take action if the Saudis are proven to be to blame for the missing journalist.
We would be very upset and angry if that were the case. As of this moment, they deny it, and they deny it vehemently. Could it be them? Yes. We're going to get to the bottom of it, and there will be severe punishment.
President Trump has not offered any indications on what that punishment could be. And this morning, Saudi Arabia fired back a warning shot, warning it will retaliate against any punitive action.
Okay, so that was Jake Tapper. He says this is we're in crisis because of the 2018 election. I think that he's probably right, but maybe I see it a little differently than he does. Sandy Rios, back with you. I want to spend the next 4 weeks heavily concentrating on the upcoming elections. And so, my motive is to motivate you, to get you to think about various elections in different states, to think outside of the box, not just in your state. Certainly do what you can in your state, but if there are other states where you have candidates that you'd like to help, you are not bound by, you can give, you can volunteer, you can do phone calls, you can do things right where you are. You can even, if you're really enthused, fly where they are and walk precincts. You'd have to coordinate it with their campaign, but you can do all of those things. And I'm just encouraging all of you, and I know many of you are getting really, really involved. Many of the people at our Branson retreat were talking to me about all the things they're doing in their local areas to try to get involved. And so asking you to do that, let me just say that there are various polls coming out. You know that. They've been telling us for several months now that the left is very enthused. They're so excited, over the top. They can't wait. We see them, you know, rioting in the streets. We see their enthusiasm. We see their anger. It's really, it's very frightening, actually. It's very creepy. When you think about that being our children, did you see that that mob in Portland, Oregon, taking over the streets and making cars go certain ways and then actually attacking this man in his 70s when he gets out of his car, breaking his window, beating it with clubs, you know, scaring him to death, I'm sure. And I think it was his wife inside. It's just amazing. And the mayor of Portland did nothing. This is kind of where we are. And Portland just had another near riot. I guess you could call it a riot over the weekend, where Antifa, which is the group that took over the streets a few weeks ago, just last week. And so yesterday they took, I think it was yesterday, it could have been Saturday. They went after a patriot group that was marching with flags. Now this, it's what, Proud Boys, and I'm not sure what the other name of it is. I don't think that, my understanding is that that group is not violent, but they're willing to fight. They're upset because they think America's under attack and they're sort of taking on the left. So they were marching down the streets of Portland with the flags, and then they were attacked by Antifa. It's pretty amazing. You can see videos. I'm sure you've seen some of it. Surely you have. The interesting thing this morning is that the mayor of Portland says, he didn't call in the police. He doesn't intend to. He's just letting Antifa take over. He's letting these riots take place in his street, these fights. While the people, like this man who was just driving his car, you can see that video. Adam, we should find that video and put it on our Facebook page. There are videos of them just stopping people in the streets, and people are threatened. Can you imagine in your hometown if you couldn't drive, you know, to the supermarket without being under assault by Antifa with masks and clubs? I mean, that's really where it's going. Certainly if the police don't step in and if the mayor and the people who are in charge don't do anything. And that's where we are with the 2018 elections. It's a pretty stark contrast as far as I'm concerned, because the left has coalesced in the Democratic Party. They just have. Any moderate Democrats that used to be there can hardly survive. And so they have become the party of anarchy, of open borders, of violence. You heard Eric Holder say, you know, we should let you hear Eric Holder say it, or let's say it. Let's play the Eric Holder clip. I'm not sure where it is, but it's there somewhere. Number two.
It is time for us as Democrats to be as tough as they are, to be as dedicated as they are, to be as committed as they are. Michelle always says, Michelle Obama, I love her, you know, she and my wife, like, really tight, which always scares me and Barack. But Michelle always says that, you know, when they go low, we go high. No, no. When they go low, we kick them.
So that's the former Attorney General of the United States. When they go low, we kick them. Now, he said later, oh, no, I didn't mean anything illegal. But in this particular atmosphere where you've got so many congressmen and others under attack, real attack, we've got Rand Paul really seriously injured by his neighbor under attack over Obamacare. When you've got the Republicans who were could have been all murdered in that field in Alexandria last year, because they were Republicans. And we've got other Republicans under attack, too. The Republican headquarters in New York was attacked over the weekend. You can't use that kind of language. It's very dangerous. And my point is just to underscore to you that the Democrats have become more and more radical. Hillary Clinton was also, you know what she said. We should listen to clip one, too.
With a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for, what you care about. That's why I believe if we are fortunate enough to win back the House and or the Senate, that's when civility can start again. But until then, the only thing that the Republicans seem to recognize and respect is strength. And you heard how the Republican members, led by Mitch McConnell, the president, really demeaned the confirmation process, insulted and attacked not only Dr. Ford, but women who were speaking out.
Really? You know, that's interesting. We can't be civil. Civility is gone toward Republicans because they're trying to undermine what we're trying to do. That from the woman who was the chief disciple of Saul Alinsky, who studied with the Chicago mob, went on the streets with them, studied their methods, and that's when he wrote Rules for Radicals. The ruthless taking of power, no matter what it does, no matter what you have to do. That's what Hillary wrote her thesis on, and that was her mentor's personal mentor. He was still alive. They were friends. So then she tells us that civility, we can't practice civility with, so she says it very smoothly. She's smooth, all right, but we know exactly what she's saying. She's certainly in line with Maxine Waters and with Eric Holder, too. We saw what Eric Holder did when he was the attorney general. He unleashed the vilest things. Sometimes there are ways to do violence that are not violent. I remember the operation with the guns, where they actually put guns in Mexico, Operation Fast and Furious. They put guns in Mexico that actually killed people because they were trying to track. I don't know what they were trying to do, but that's what Eric Holder did, one of the many things under his watch. He was held in contempt of Congress for not coming to testify over that. So we're dealing with people who are absolutely lawless, absolutely lawless. Hillary Clinton is one of them. And so this is the current Democratic Party, I'm sad to say. It's just true. It wasn't always that way. My parents were Democrats. I grew up in an area of the country that was strongly Democratic. And people were nicer then. You know, it was an era where Republicans were sort of big government. They were industry titans back at the turn of the century. They were the party of the wealthy. That was true, 100 years ago. But it's not true now. And so the Democrats were the party of the people, the working people. That was my background. But it's not the case anymore. It's just not. So we have an election. We're hurtling toward that. There are some interesting polls that I want to share with you. You have to always look at who the pollster is. And we know that we cannot trust them no matter what. So you have to hold them with a grain of salt. But this is a pretty amazing poll. This is NPR, PBS, and Marist. And they're not friends to conservatives. None of those entities. Trust me. But it shows that the enthusiasm gap between the Republican and Democratic parties has dropped from a 10-point Democratic advantage to a dead heat. And that was, of course, after Kavanaugh. And in public and private polls in Arizona, Florida, and Texas, Republican statewide candidates have opened up substantial leads over where they were with the Democratic opponents. Trump's favorable ratings have also jumped. You know, it's funny because Rasmussen says that his approval is at 41, but other polls, which I should read this other one, of course, have him down like 10 points. You just can't. We already know this, right? We can't trust pollsters. This is a story from the Washington Post. And so you can know that whatever poll they quote is not going to be favorable to conservatives. But this is what they are. This is their Washington Post ABC News poll. They say that President Trump's job approval rating has risen 5 points. 77% of majority of registered voters say they are certain to vote. 77%? That's amazing. That if that happens, that'll be amazing. They say that's up from 65% majority in post-ABC polls in October 2014. All right, so the vote is up 32 points among women younger than 40 compared to 2014. And among men and women ages 18 to 29, it has risen 17 points. Among non-white registered voters, 72% are now certain to vote, up from 48% in 2014. White men without college degrees represent the one heavily Republican group whose certainty to vote is lower than average and has increased less than other groups since 2014. In contrast, white women with college degrees are up 15 points to 88%. For white women without degrees, the figure is up 12 points. One more. I'll just give you one more here. Among voters who prefer Democratic candidates for the House, 81% say they are certain to vote, up from 60% in 2014. And among those who support Republican candidates, enthusiasm now stands at 76% compared to 73% in October 2014. Well, all right. So that just gives you an idea. Whatever happens, it's going to be very close. It's going to be very close in the Senate races. It's going to be very close in the House races. The Senate is more likely to stay, of course, Republican because there are a lot of Democrats up running in red states, and they have a disadvantage, no question about it, because those states carried for Donald Trump. In the House, many of the seats that are up are in suburban districts, also because a lot of Republicans, I think 40 of them, are not coming back. You don't have the advantage of name recognition. A lot of people still are not paying attention. I was amazed when I went home this past weekend to see how many people are just still not interested. Oh, I don't watch the news. I'm not interested. Oh, those Republicans and those Democrats, they're always at each other. They're all the same. I mean, this is the level of discourse for many people in the country who are still just doing their lives, somehow they think they don't even have a grasp on what's really happening, and they think that bad things can never come to their community and their lives, and so they'd rather be absent and not take on the burden of worrying about what's happening in the country. That's what I'm seeing. I want to tell you something. I want to focus now on a race in the 7th District of Virginia, because that's a race where Congressman Dave Brat, who's part of the Freedom Caucus, is being challenged by Democrat Abigail Spanberger. And I want to tell you as much as I can about that race, but I want to tell you first up that there is a debate between Dave Brat and Abigail Spanberger tonight in Culpeper, Virginia. I know we have a lot of listeners in that area of Virginia, so if you can go to that debate tonight, it would be a good thing, and you can hear them both speak and see what you think. It's at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time at the Daniel Technology Center at Germana Community College. So that's at 6:30 tonight in Culpeper at the Daniel Technology Center at, hope I can read this, Germana Community College. I wrote it so quickly. So that's the debate tonight between Dave Brat and Abigail Spanberger. Let me talk about this race just for a second, because this is an interesting one. You know that Congressman Dave Brat was the one who beat Eric, the minority leader in the House, Eric Cantor. Eric was kind of the darling, really, of the Republicans a long time ago. He's one of the young guns, they called him. And the problem with Eric Cantor is that the more he served, the more liberal he became, especially on the issue of immigration. And people in Northern Virginia are seeing their state completely transformed by out-of-control immigration. If you've ever been to D.C., you can see there is out-of-control immigration. It looks like a third-world country rather than part of the United States of America. So people there are seeing it more urgently than maybe some of you in other parts of the country. So people in Goochland County, Virginia, which is right outside of Richmond, and a couple of other counties there also, got together, and they supported this professor named Dave Brat, who was a professor of, he was an economist. And so he also has his degree in theology from Princeton, and they supported him. And that race was not even on the map for Republicans. They thought Eric Cantor was a shoo-in. And in that race, Dave Brat pulled off an upset that really shook Washington and the establishment to their core. And so Dave Brat has been serving in that capacity now for, I think this will be his third term. I'm not sure, third or fourth. And he's being challenged now by a former member of the CIA named Abigail Spanberger. She's a tough challenger. People are calling it a toss-up. And we're going to talk about Abigail in just a second when we come back and about that race, because it's really very interesting. And I feel it's a very, very important race, one of many happening around the country. But Dave Brat and Abigail Spanberger will be debating tonight. If you're in Virginia, I'd say, you know, have dinner early and go to this debate. It's at 6:30 at Daniel Technology Center at Germana Community College. That's in Culpeper. And that's where we actually, one of our signals comes out, our pretty good sized signals. It goes up to Washington, D.C., in fact. It's a big signal. And we are happy to be there. And we know that there are a lot of you in the listening audience there. So go to that debate, because you need to be aware and present in the 7th District of Virginia. I'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
You shall have no other gods before me. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. In 1954, Americans lived under constant threat of nuclear attack from the USSR. When America's children practiced duck and cover in classrooms across the country, President Eisenhower realized that our pledge had no distinction from any other republic. After hearing a sermon on February 7th of that year, President Eisenhower signed a law adding the words, "Under God," to our pledge. The president recognized the true source of unity, of indivisibility, is unwavering submission to the God of the Bible. As we go about our day, let us all remember the only true source of national unity is submission to Almighty God.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. It's sad to see what has become of Columbus Day in America. Something that was virtually a national holiday when I was in school is celebrated in fewer and fewer locales in America. Not even Columbus, Ohio celebrates it anymore. Well, if some people aren't happy that Columbus came to America, I am not one of those people, their blame is misdirected. They should be blaming the religion of Islam instead. The nations of Europe had traded with India and China using the Silk Road for centuries. But in the 15th century, Islamic jihadists disrupted the land routes, made them too dangerous for travelers, and forced Europe to look for a sea route to the Far East. When he came west, he thought he had reached India instead of America. I'm glad he was wrong.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is James calling from Texas. AFR has been a beacon of truth and a ray of hope in an otherwise dismal world of lies and error in the media. I really get encouraged listening to Brian Fisher on Focal Point, as well as the morning crew on today's issues. Dan Celia has helped me understand market trends better, while exploring the Word has been a great way to get into the Word while I'm driving. I love what AM Hamilton is doing, plus all the great programming on the weekend. Thank you for all you do to get the good news of Christ out there, as well as equipping us for the major spiritual battles in our schools, government, and workplaces. Thank you.
American Family Radio's mission is to inform, equip, and activate our listeners to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture. Plan to partner with us in this vital work during our three-day share-a-thon, beginning tomorrow on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. This weekend, President Trump welcomed home Pastor Andrew Brunson, a courageous American missionary who worked for decades to minister to Christians in an increasingly Sharia supremacist Turkey. The pastor had been incarcerated in harsh and dangerous Turkish prisons for 2 years by the Islamist regime of Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Until, that is, Mr. Trump decided to do two things that should be used to help many millions of other Christians still being heavily persecuted in Turkey and elsewhere around the world. First, hold the persecutors accountable for what they're doing. And second, impose costs for their crimes against humanity. In addition, the United States must serve notice on persecutors like Erdogan. Our commitment to religious freedom does not apply to those who claim that the practice of their religion entitles them to deny this fundamental human right to people of other faiths. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
They are protesting. They are not an angry mob.
We are subhuman. We're done being polite.
Answer your question that you asked to her. Is it mob behavior? No, it's
not. You gotta hold the door, ma'am.
You gotta get arrested.
He's created this idea of a mob.
But calling them mobs in the way that the leader McConnell has done is just wrong.
In the Constitution, you can protest whenever and wherever you want.
We believe in survivors.
It's a go watch. Put up the
a
video.
Mob, stop.
Excuse me, ma'am. Are you trying to assault me?
This is assault.
Yes, Sarah!
This kind of like racialized mob language, this kind of Nixonian law and order language that we're hearing.
The angry mob, the angry mob, the angry mob, even though these were just peaceful protesters.
Republicans are running on this idea that the left is an angry mob.
Wherever you come down on Brett Kavanaugh, describing protesters as a mob doesn't fit the facts.
That's not a mob.
Kill her three-year-old child.
Which side was more mob-like? Clearly it was the Republicans.
The president is trying to go too far with some of this rhetoric, you know, his talk of mob rule and so on. I mean, Brooke, have you been to a Trump rally?
Rushing to the top of the steps of the Supreme Court and now besieging the front door of the Supreme Court.
That's a montage by the Washington Beacon, and that's not quite all of it. By the way, we'll put that on our Facebook page because it's visual. You can see the mobs, and you see that the leftist press got their talking points, and that was to claim that it's not a mob. Look, if you saw any of those things in just Portland that I mentioned earlier, the banging on people's cars with sticks, breaking their glasses, the fights in the streets in Portland last night, if you'd heard the screaming in the gallery when Brett Kavanaugh was confirmed by the Senate, it really is unbelievable. People banging on the Supreme Court doors. By the way, did I say, I wish I had, that when I was at the Supreme Court on several occasions in my lifetime, and I have been there, the Capitol Police or the Supreme Court Police will not even allow us on the steps. They were always rude to pro-life protesters when we did the pro-life march. Very rude. And all business. And they let them up on the steps, let them up to bang on the doors, to climb on the statues. I was just, it was unbelievable. But that is a mob. In fact, President Trump addressed that in his rally over the weekend in Kansas. Let's listen.
I stand before you today on the heels of a tremendous victory for our nation, our people, and our beloved Constitution. And I want to thank our incredible Republican senators for refusing to back down in the face of the Democrats' shameless campaign of political and personal destruction. Since the moment Brett Kavanaugh was named, and you remember this, we made an announcement, and since right from the moment we announced, radical Democrats launched a disgraceful campaign to resist, obstruct, delay, demolish, and destroy. Over the past few weeks, every American has now seen the profound stakes in the upcoming election. You now see it. We have been energized. We have been energized. Painting the fake news. If Democrats are willing to cause such destruction in the pursuit of power, just imagine the devastation they would cause if they ever obtained the power they so desperately want and crave. I don't have the courage. You don't hand matches to an arsonist, and you don't give power to an angry left-wing mob, and that's what they've become.
All right, that was President Trump in Kansas over the weekend. All right, so we're getting ready for the 2018 elections, and how do we stop this? Right now, we want to do everything within the bounds of the Constitution and the law. That's what we must do. And so that means that we must vote, we must pay attention, we must support candidates who will do and abide by the rule of law, which brings me to this. The House Freedom Caucus, I talk about them a lot because they are the patriots. There are other patriots, but I'm telling you, in the House, they are the patriots. And they're not partisan. A Democrat can be a part of the House Freedom Caucus, but they are not because there aren't any. They will embrace the principles. By the way, the House Freedom Caucus has a PAC. It's Oh, it's called the House Freedom Fund. House Freedom Fund. And could I recommend that you, in fact, we can put that on our Facebook page, the House Freedom Fund, because again, they're nonpartisan. They will support anybody. They will support anybody who embraces the principles of conservatism. But at this point, there aren't any Democrats in the House Freedom Caucus. In fact, this is their statement. House Freedom Fund only supports candidates for Congress who are dedicated to open, accountable, and limited government. Candidates who will fight to defend the Constitution and advance policies that promote liberty, safety, and prosperity for all Americans. They are, of course, the current chairman is Mark Meadows. Jim Jordan is, I believe, their co-chairs, but they're the ones that head it up. It's become a powerful group, not by numbers. They only I think they only have, like, I want to say something, we're in the area of 30, but they hold fast. They are the principled men, and they deserve our support. And I know that four of them, four incumbents in the House Freedom Caucus, are in really tough races. And if you are listening, they are Rod Blum of Iowa. He's in District 1. Ted Budd of North Carolina is in District 13. Scott Perry in Pennsylvania is in District 10. Dave Bratt in Virginia is District 7. By the way, Dave is being challenged again by a former CIA operative named Abigail Spanberger. They are debating tonight at the Daniel Technology Center. That's at Germanna Community College at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time. For those of you in Virginia, I'm just saying, you need to go and hear this debate and see what you think about this. Abigail Spanberger, by the way, the big story on her is that she taught at the Islamic Saudi Terror High. That's what they call it. The Islamic Saudi Academy in Northern Virginia. She was a former CIA operative. And to give you kind of a feeling for what the Saudi Academy in Northern Virginia is, we went back in the old archives, and Jennifer Griffin, this is in 2008, did a report on this Saudi school because it was making national news. Let's listen.
This is an elite prep school, if you will, for many Saudi diplomats, many diplomats who just want their kids to learn Arabic. And it's literally just a couple of miles from the U.S. Capitol in Alexandria, Virginia. And it has what has people up in arms is that some of the textbooks that some of the families at the school have provided to the Gulf Institute, which then provided it to this U.S. Congressional Commission, they have things in it that would make your hair stand on end. We have one of the textbooks here. This is what it looks like. It shows a picture of the school on the front, and we had our own translators look at some of the text. Here's what one of them said. It says, Allah has forbidden killing souls, except if someone enters the Islamic faith, becomes a Muslim, then exits it, and becomes an infidel. So then it's okay to kill it, according to this text, the tafsir, it says, on page 123. Also, if you commit adultery, or if you kill a Muslim believer intentionally. So all of this is basically promoting killing. Then there's a text about Jews. It says, the Jews conspired against Islam and its people. A sly, wicked person who sinfully and deceitfully professed Islam infiltrated the Muslims. He was, and they give the name of the Jew, and he began spewing his malice and venom against the third caliph, Uthman. This Jew incited an internal fight. This is a private institution. They pay Fairfax County, which is just across the river, $2.2 million to lease the school from them. But the State Department has been working with the Saudi government in the last 2 years, in the last actually several years, to try and get them to change the Saudi textbooks. And what we understand from the State Department is that this school in particular, it's called the Islamic Saudi Academy, it had promised to change the textbooks by this fall, 2008. Mm-hmm. The Saudi government, when we asked to go to the school and look at the textbooks, they gave us a whole song and dance about how they weren't prepared and they wanted more time to look at the textbooks. They were warned about this last October, Edie, by the commission when they first revealed this.
Oh, that was a long time ago, 2008, Jennifer Griffin reporting. That was a Saudi academy where Abigail Spanberger was an English teacher. And now there's a big dust-up about this. Abigail is challenging Dave Bratt in the 7th District. Abigail, a former CIA officer, is blaming, she's accusing the Congressional Leadership Fund of obtaining the records that reveal that she was a teacher there illegally. Well, they're fighting back and saying absolutely not. And when they published the story, they redacted all of her personal information. Well, she's claiming publicly that they did not redact it. And that's how she's trying to sort of, I would say, avert the attention from the fact that she taught at that academy. And to be more specific about the academy, Chuck Schumer from New York was so concerned about the Islamic Saudi Academy in 2005, he called for a full-scale probe. He did it for good reason. One of the school's valedictorians, Ahmed Omar Abu Ali, later joined al-Qaeda and was indicted for plotting to assassinate George W. Bush. He is currently serving 30 years in prison. Two of the school's other students, the New York Post reported at the time, were denied entry into Israel in 2001. According to authorities, the boys were carrying farewell notes, a telltale sign of suicide attack. The pair were later arrested. And so you get the idea. That's Abigail Spanberger. And of course, she's fighting back. She says, basically, what has Dave Brett done for national security? How dare he question my credentials? She says, I'm not sure what Congressman Brett has done to fight terrorism, but I was a CIA caseworker working counterterrorism cases abroad and running a large-scale program aimed at thwarting the terrorist threat. I have nothing to hide and never have. If Congressman Brett thinks he's a better judge of whom should receive clearances, he's welcome to take that up with the CIA. In the interim, I look forward to debating the issues with him. And they're going to be debating tonight, again at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time, at the Daniel Technology Center at Germana Community College in Culpeper, Virginia. There's an interesting article from Breitbart. It's called Deep State Democrat Abigail Spanberger Challenging Dave Brett, Exposed for Ties to Terrorism-Linked Group. We'll put that on our Facebook page, and you can have that as a resource. Meanwhile, I mentioned to you that the House Freedom Fund is endorsing, they're endorsing a lot of candidates, people that are strong conservatives that they have assessed around the country that they think will join Freedom Caucus. What's at stake for us? Well, I'll tell you one thing that's at stake for us. We have, you know that the House of Representatives has basically been dormant. You do know that, right? Except that they have passed massive spending bills, put us in, what is it, $12 trillion of debt now under the leadership of Paul Ryan? And I'd have to say that Paul Ryan has basically done nothing except undermine conservatives. That's the only thing I know for sure he's done. I know he's not defunded Planned Parenthood. He's funded everything that the Democrats and the left wants. Did you hear him say anything about Brett Kavanaugh? Did he go public about that? Any statements? We certainly heard him go public criticizing Donald Trump on numbers of occasions, so embarrassed, distancing himself, undermining him on immigration law and immigration orders. Paul Ryan, I think, has been a disaster. And so that's why I'm pretty high on Jim Jordan being the new speaker. Now, I can't vote on this, neither can you, because the Speaker of the House is someone that the members of the House have to vote on. And the only way they can vote on a good speaker, what difference would it make? It would mean investigations with real teeth in them instead of show pony investigations, which is what Paul Ryan has overseen. Whether it was Benghazi, which was a total sham, even the Planned Parenthood investigation was too little too late. Rather than defund it, they put on a show of investigating. And yes, they did investigate it, but didn't mean anything. They couldn't do anything by then, and they knew it. So it was trying to do both things. Not defund it, because that would have been a hard political decision, and pretend like you care by having a hearing. And so we need Jim Jordan in there, and that's why we need more Freedom Caucus members. The House Freedom Fund is endorsing several. Russ Fulcher in Idaho, Mark Green in Tennessee. Mark Green is in Tennessee. Debbie Lasko is in Arizona. Chip Roy is in Texas. Mike Cloud is in Texas. Ron Wright is in Texas. Denver Riggleman is in Virginia. Denver Riggleman, that's a funny name, isn't it? Ben Klein, Virginia. Greg Stoob in Florida. And I know Mark Harris also in North Carolina. Those are the endorsements from the House Freedom Caucus. You can get that at housefreedomfund.com on your you look yourself and you can see who they're endorsing and who needs help. So there's just to get you started on how to support strong conservatives. This is Sandy Rios. By the way, Dave Brett will be my guest tomorrow in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.